I'm Brendan Marcello, Auburn beat reporter for AL.com, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in turned hair! A miracle in turned hair!
And according to my sources, it's an almost credible sports discussion.
They're not going to keep them off the field tonight!
On the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, there's a certain college football team whose head coach is renowned as an offensive play calling and designing genius. They brought in a respected defensive coordinator in the offseason after the defense looked so bad last year. There was a lot of big talk and big predictions in the offseason. They haven't quite had the season everyone expected so far. There's been talk of maybe there was a bad element in the locker room, at least for a while. People have been complaining that the freshman quarterback who started the season as the backup is very capable of making big throws, but maybe hasn't been allowed to attempt it, at least for a while. And they lost on Saturday, and the commentators now are saying things like, this is the worst wide receiving core ever, considering how much talent it has. And you know what team I'm speaking of, don't you, John?
You're talking about Texas A&M.
I am indeed talking about the Texas A&M Aggies, Auburn's opponent in just a couple of short weeks. So we're not the only ones having all those things happen. All of those things, right? That's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
It is a little spooky.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you know, this is another one of those episodes where I say we got to laugh or we're going to cry, and it's going to be one or the other, and I'd rather laugh than cry. So I felt pretty bad, I have to say. Saturday afternoon about 4 o'clock or whenever it was, probably about 5 o'clock for you. Whenever it was. I mean, that it was weird. That game,
it was a long game.
No. Hold on. Up until overtime, it was a remarkably short game. That sucker. Even, get this, my wife and I were talking about this, even with the injured player that had to come off and they delayed the game for a while with that, even then, that game was going to be over in less than 3 hours before overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost unheard of. And then overtime, of course, took us another, you know, hour at least or whatever, but it was going to be a very short game, and even when four overtimes were over, it still was. I've seen plenty of games that ran with no overtime that ran longer than that.
No, it was long.
it seemed long. Yeah, and the overtime was excruciating. But I've gotten to the point in my life, and I want to get your feelings on this before we get any deeper. I've gotten to the point in my life where when Auburn loses a football game, it disappoints me, but I don't just get sick and feel bad, certainly not for days, with a few exceptions, okay? Certainly the Florida State game was, I think, the worst one ever.
That's the worst one in a long time.
Yeah, we talked about that, and there have been plenty back when we were younger. But this one really made me feel bad for a while. I just fell back on the couch and just kind of lay there staring at the wall for a long time. How does that compare to you?
I had to get out of the house and get away from football. So honestly, I went out and mowed the grass because I needed to get away from it. I needed to do something physical, and I could not sit there and watch more football.
And you know what, ladies and gentlemen, his grass didn't need mowing. He just went out there and spent an hour and a half running the mower over the short grass, not actually cutting anything, as penance.
It did need mowing, but it was, you know, and I put my headphones on and listen to a podcast or something, but I didn't even do that. I just went out there and mowed the grass.
Yeah. I just lay on the couch staring at the wall and the ceiling for a long time. And I think my wife asked me a couple of things and finally just gave up and walked away. I felt bad, but I just wasn't even in the world. You know, I just felt bad because You know what that one reminded me of in a lot of ways was the old the first overtime game in SEC history.
I thought about the same thing. That stupid Georgia game.
Mm-hmm.
Was it 96?
Yep. 1996 Georgia Auburn game.
The 1996 Georgia Auburn game was the first SEC overtime game, and it went on and on and on, and it was in Auburn,
mm-hmm.
and it was so painful, just because, especially back then, overtime was incredible. Obviously, it was the first SEC game ever, but nobody had any idea what to expect, and the agony of the back and forth and.
Well, a couple of things.
Excruciating.
A couple of things. One, they hadn't done the 2-point conversion rule yet.
Yes.
So you could just keep kicking extra points all day, all mm-hmm. night, and they did. Two, it was a late starting game. It started at Central time. It started at least 6:30, if not 7:30. Remember, mm-hmm. ESPN2 used to show like a 7:30 yep. Central game, which would be 8:30 yep. Eastern back then. And I remember there was an Auburn Florida game that was similar to a couple of years later, and. I was living on the other side of Atlanta. I was living in Gwinnett County back then. And at one point, I looked over at the person I was with, and I said, honestly, I don't care if we win or lose. I want to go home. Of course, as soon as we lost, I felt bad, about saying that. But I was just to that point where, come on. And it was kind of the same thing where we couldn't stop them, and you felt like we were eventually not going to be able to have everything go right.
Yep.
So...
Well, you get to a point where neither team could stop the other in overtime. I mean, the, mm-hmm. the defenses are worn down. The offenses have just, been out there for so long, they start to click. And
yeah.
Fatigue sets in and guys are getting open easier. And
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Several things that we obviously have to get into here. But before we start digging into the game itself, we have an announcement.
We do have an announcement. It's very exciting.
It's finally time to make the big announcement. I tweeted about it earlier today, just as a sneak preview for those out there that don't get to listen to the show the first day or two. Why don't you, because you're a little closer to it, to the author, tell the folks kind of what it is, and I'll chime in too.
Sure. We're excited to announce a new book. It's a book about Coach Gene Lorindo, and the author is my father, Ken Ringer.
Yes.
And it's a very exciting project. My dad is not an author, not a writer by trade, but he loved this story, and he collected stories about Coach Lorindo from people all over the country. And it is a fascinating tale, not just about Auburn and about football, but about a guy who really led a Paul Bunyan-esque kind of epic American life.
Yes.
I mean, a guy that grew up in the Northwoods in Minnesota with lumberjacks in a different time, a different place. He played college sports in multiple colleges multiple times for many years, football and basketball, well exceeding his – 4-year limit.
Those were the days, weren't they?
Record keeping wasn't quite as tight then.
These days, you'd have to play for the Miami Hurricanes to do that.
And at the same time, he served in World War II. He was president Iwo Jima and Okinawa at the surrender of the Japanese.
Yep.
And then he, he played at Georgia. He was a coach at Georgia. He was the head coach at a small college, and then he was on Auburn's staff through some of the best years in Auburn history under Shug Jordan.
That's right.
And
an amazing guy personally. I mean, he's just big, huge, tough,
He was the guy who lived in the players' village in Auburn who basically kept law and order. And everybody was scared of him.
Everybody was, even the biggest players. Yeah, it's amazing.
But also everybody loved him too, because he was a great guy. He was a big teddy bear in a lot of ways. And so he was there for many of the biggest moments in Auburn football history, and coached them and coached the players and was directly involved. And there's a lot of those great stories in there. A lot of them are told from the people who were there to my father, and he wrote the stories down and put them in the book. And so that's the part I think is just fascinating. There's a lot of things that people are going to be excited about. So we're at some point in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have my dad on to do an interview with us about the book. But the book's available on Amazon now. and will soon be available at bookstores in Auburn. And his plan is to do a book signing at the Auburn-Alabama game at the Auburn University Bookstore and to have many former players who played for Coach Horrendo at the book signing with him.
That's a pretty good deal, too. You and I got like Arkansas State and something. How did he get Alabama, man?
He knows a couple people.
He knows some people, yes.
I would say if you go out to Amazon, you could search for Lorendo. It's Lorndo is the name of the book, and by Ken Ringer. And if you look on there, there's already a review up by somebody who's read the book, who does not identify himself, but the person who wrote that review is David Housel. David Housel. So that gives a little bit of idea to who's involved in the book. So.
And as the person who was fortunate to get to do the book design, kind of take it all and put it all together, I'll tell you a couple of things more. It's got lots of cool pictures all the way through. It's got pictures of Lorendo's hometown. It's got pictures of when he got married. It's got pictures of him in World War II and some of the landing craft in the Pacific, you know, for attacking Iwo Jima and everything. He was piloting those boats and, you know, in the Pacific. It's got, like you said, some great personal reminiscences from people like Pat Sullivan and some of the other great players of that era. It's just so much fascinating stuff in it. It is absolutely a story, you know, like you say, if you're an Auburn football fan at all, you'll love it, even though it's, you know, earlier than maybe most of our listeners' era, not all, but some, you know, believe me, it fills in a lot of stuff that you're just like, whoa, that's so cool. And then even if you're not an Auburn person, just as a biography, you know, it's just a fascinating biography. And like you said, your dad worked for a long time doing just all the research, gathering all the pictures, writing all the stories down, putting it all together. I mean, it's got like, you know, 35 chapters or something, and each one is a little snippet of this guy's life, and it's just amazing. So, yeah, assistant coach Gene Lorendo. Yeah, if you go to Amazon, all you got to type in is Lorendo, Lorendo, and it will come up. It's the only thing that comes up. And I've got a link already up at the Facebook page for the Wishbone, so you can go there and click right through. It's really easy, and I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So there you go.
All right.
Let's talk about our game in the smokehouse.
Let's do it.
So, in a way, it was almost like our offense in the 2010 Iron Bowl, where we had nothing until the last drive before halftime, and then scored a touchdown. And you think, well, maybe because it was 14-0 until right up before halftime. Really, the miracle up till then is we'd held them to only 14 points.
We did. There was a point in the game, you know, late in the first quarter where it looked like we were going to get blown out of the building.
Yes.
Where we opened the game with four punts in a row, I think, and they were rolling up and down the field, and it really looked like we were fixing to get, you know, 40-3 or something there.
We had 15 yards, and we had one first down, and that was because of a penalty.
Mm-hmm. But, the biggest plays in the game, and I think the thing that really turned us around, was the Chris Frost interception at the goal line.
Yeah.
That was the point in the game where, you know, they were driving down, and it looked like they were going to score again, and Frost made a diving interception at about the 5 or 6 yard line, and that's when Auburn got a little bit of confidence back and drove all the way down the field and scored the first touchdown. And after that, it was a very even game.
Yeah.
That was really, really the point of the game where Auburn was kind of on the ropes, and the defense made a play and kept us in it, and then the offense, you know, took advantage of it and went down the field and made plays. And finally, at that point, the receiver started catching the ball.
Yeah, if you had told me about halfway through the second quarter that we would be playing overtime in that game, I'd have been thrilled.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it seemed like we were, like you say, we were getting blown out, and what's worse, and I have it ready this week, we were getting blown out by...
Hey, Beavis, what? Let's go fishing.
We were getting blown out by him, okay?
I know.
Two and four.
But this is the other thing that made it almost more frustrating than, like, the first half of the 2010 Iron Bowl, is the offensive plays were there.
Yes.
We just didn't execute them. It wasn't like Arkansas was, you know, blowing up every single play. and in the backfield and tackling us. And, you know, it was that we would have a guy wide open. Shaun White would throw a pass on target, and the guy dropped it.
I was about to say, who is the one player on the entire Auburn team that had a solid – because even the punter had a bad punt at one point.
Mm-hmm.
When everything else was going bad, you just knew even the punter was going to have a 25-yard punt, and he did. Who was the one player on the entire Auburn team that played pretty much good, solid the entire game?
Shaun White. Yeah, I mean, and this was really his – I mean, he was good at the beginning of the Kentucky game. But you have to say this game is kind of his coming out party.
Absolutely.
When you saw him play that way over the course of the whole game and in the overtimes, I mean, I have an enormous amount of confidence in Shaun White now, and I feel really good about him as our quarterback going forward. We can win with Shaun White.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have any doubt about it.
He's not going to be a quarterback that can take a game over, but he's a quarterback that can do the things necessary to win and not make a lot of mistakes that mess you up. And there's a lot to be said.
Well, I mean, just an efficient distributor of the football. You know, I mean, he went on the road two games in a row, and you know, in this game, he didn't have a turnover. He completed a high percentage of passes. I mean, and the passes he didn't complete, you know, 90% of them weren't his fault. And I thought he played great. I mean, he was really, really good. Yeah. So I.
19 of 32, but I mean, if you take away like 7 or 8 drops,
mm-hmm.
that's like.
That would be like 25 of 32.
19 of 24. Yeah, oh yeah. 19, 22. Yeah, about 26 of 32. That's pretty darn good. And
yeah.
And about 350 yards.
That's right.
So, yeah, I thought he. What do you think, by the way, about bringing Jeremy Johnson in to be the goal line quarterback?
I thought it was great.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you were thrilled about it the last time we did it when it kind of blew up.
Well, I was fine with it then, but we screwed it up. So,
right.
I think it's a good idea, number one, because it keeps Jeremy invested, and I think it gives him a chance to do something positive. And the other part is, if you go back and watch that play again, I don't think we would have scored if anybody else was in there, because he got hit about the 1 yard line by two guys that kind of bounced off and slid in the end zone. So I think, you know, him being in that position made the play. And I think it's something he can do. So, I mean, I think it's a way to keep him involved and keep him excited and, you know, in the game plan and feel like he's contributing. And I think, it's something that he has the ability to do. And, I don't know who else we have that can do it. So I think it's fine.
This team, and I said this to a couple of people privately – this team has begun to remind me of like the very earliest Pat Dye teams. It didn't always win, but man, it felt like they'd scratch and claw and scrap, you know, and not give up and hang around. And you felt like big things were coming eventually. Do you get that sense?
No, I mean, I absolutely. This team doesn't have the firepower on either side of the ball that some other Auburn teams have had.
Right.
I mean, they don't have, you know, a big, big play receiver that can take over a game. And they don't have a lot of explosive plays on offense. And they don't have, you know, a lot of guys on defense that are, you know, that guy's an all-conference player right now. But, I mean, anybody that thinks that, Gus or whoever have lost these players, they didn't watch a minute of that game because they played their guts out. The entirety of that game. So I thought they played really, really hard. And the other thing is, because we don't get a lot of explosive plays, the offense has to go, you know, 5 yard chunks down the field without making mistakes. And now they're doing it.
That's right.
I mean, they couldn't do it, you know, a month ago, but they're doing it now.
That makes it even harder. They had to put together. I mean, how many plays were those touchdown drives? Like 17 plays?
There were a lot. And I mean, and you remember at the beginning of the year, we really had a hard time on offense. We're the number one team in the SEC in third down conversions on offense now.
Good gosh.
We are. And it's because of those drives.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is Shaun White. He makes plays on third down. So,
he does.
I think they do. They really are in some ways starting to maximize what they can be. You know, defensively, we're still a bit of a train wreck. We can't get a lot of pass rush without blitzing. And, you know, we get pushed around some. But I thought, you know, we did okay against the run. At the beginning of the game, we weren't covering their tight end, which seemed kind of bizarre. It's the one guy on their receiving.
Oh, my goodness.
Hurt us.
Oh.
And then this is the kind of thing that sometimes our opponents seem to act kind of stupidly to me. Like, then they forgot about him for three quarters.
Yeah.
I'd have been throwing the ball to that guy the whole game. But
absolutely, they
forgot he existed for a while, which helped us get back in the game.
I went and looked for his numbers because I was thinking he had to have had 500 yards and 25 catches. He had five catches for 68 yards.
No, he had like three catches at the beginning of the game, and then he had a couple at the end.
He just
ignored him other than that.
He had three catches on the first drive. I remember. He had like 50-something yards just on that first scoring drive.
Yeah.
And then he had maybe 13 yards on two catches the rest of the game.
Yeah. And I don't care if we were double-teaming him. He's the best tight end in the SEC. He can really make it, so.
And that's including four overtimes.
Yeah. So, but, defensively we're not great. Special teams are excellent. Offense is getting there. We can move the ball. We have a quarterback now. And, you know, we have Peyton Barber is really good. And Kerryon Johnson is really the X factor. I mean, he had another really good game. And you could tell we just need to keep getting that guy the ball. I mean, we got to get him the ball 10, 15 times a game at least.
That's another question I had for you. I'll go ahead and mention it now. Where was Kerryon Johnson in overtime?
I have no idea. I mean, we didn't play him. We didn't use him.
He was great through the whole game, and then in overtime, you know, he vanished. It was all Peyton Barber.
Yeah, and I at the beginning of overtime, I got it. I mean, because Peyton Barber was
great.
You know, killed him the first couple overtimes, but I think there was a point probably where he probably could have used a break. I don't know. So
here's this amazing. Peyton Barber had 120 yards and four touchdowns. Didn't you think he got more than 120 yards?
Yeah, I did.
What was his average? Don't look. Just tell me off the top of your head. What was his
average?
3.2. So look, and you know, I that's something I need to. I'm going to add to our little list here before we're done. I'm going to in just a minute. I want to address the. In fact, I'm adding it right now. This is exciting radio. Okay, I'm going to address that issue. Because I had people going all off on me on Twitter. Everybody had something to say on Twitter after I mentioned something about our running back situation. I've got several things to say, but I'll go ahead and put this one out there. Peyton Barber, 3.2 yards average, and that includes that big run in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get back to that in just a minute. Gus went for it on fourth down.
Yeah, that was a big change from last week when we punted against at the end of the game against Kentucky. This time there was a fourth down at about two, and he just late in the game, and he went for it and he got it, and that was the right call. It was but it was a big decision. So
yeah,
but I think it was the team. He was feeling it. And I think it was the right thing to do. So I thought we played the end of the game the right way. I mean, we stopped them, held them to a field goal, drove down and got the field goal. I thought that was the way to do it.
Let me ask you this. When at the end of the second overtime, I believe, we were still in the 1 point extra points,
mm-hmm.
and we had the ball last.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, right? We went first, and then we went last.
Yeah.
Should we have gone for two?
No. I mean, I get it. It's one of those things like – but the answer is always keep playing and then trying to force them to screw up and make them kick a field goal or something. So, or miss the two-pointer.
They did everything right in the overtime.
They did.
They executed well. And
our defense really, really – at one point we had them. One of the touchdowns, they scored a fourth down.
Yeah.
That was the one that – series I really thought we had him. It was like fourth and three or something, and they scored. That was the one I thought we were going to win the game on. So.
Ricardo Lewis, GOAT, hero, GOAT. Right? In the first half, he couldn't catch the flu standing naked in a cold bathtub with a fan on him. In the second half, and especially that last drive for the field goal, he had like squid, octopus, mutant tentacles with suckers, and he could catch everything. And then in overtime, he couldn't catch a cold again.
Yeah.
What the heck?
I mean, we used to joke about this when he was a younger player that he had needed a LASIK or whatever, but
mm-hmm. Well, we know he has contacts now.
I mean, I think he just had a bad day. And I think at the beginning of the game, it got in everybody's head.
Yeah.
The drop thing, clearly. But,
gosh.
You know, I think it, but you can't, I mean, I would never, ever blame Ricardo Lewis, because if he doesn't catch those passes in the last drive, we didn't even get to overtime. So if you want to complain about him, you're basically saying we didn't even get to overtime. And yeah, if he'd have caught the passes early in the game, maybe we wouldn't have had to be there, but.
We're running out of receivers.
We are.
Man.
I mean, Truett got hurt when we started playing Gray King.
He did pretty well.
He did caught that one pass. It was tipped up in the air. You're right. We are kind of running out of bodies at that position.
When they put a receiver out there and you're like, who? That's the Star-Lord effect. I'm Gray King. Who?
Well, and you know what? That makes me think? What? It made me really mad at Duke Williams.
Oh, yes.
Because look, Duke Williams, we finally have a quarterback who's accurately completing the ball to receivers up and down the field the whole game long. And all we need is one receiver who could catch the ball every time. Mm-hmm. And that was your thing. Mm-hmm. You were the guy who could always catch it. And, you know, he could have caught 15 passes in this game if he'd have played. But he didn't because he screwed it up and got kicked off the team. It made me really angry at him after the game.
You know, if you look at the distribution of receiving in this game, I mean, Ricardo had 6. Everybody else was between 1 and 3. Of course, you know that he had 3 for 55 yards. Not too bad. And Jason Smith had 2. Jason Smith finally got to go out there and do something cool.
Well, he had the long pass and he had
the run.
The run and the touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Stevens.
I mean, you could see on that touchdown run, he's fast. We need to get him the ball more.
You know what's interesting is that Stanton Truett didn't have a catch.
No, I mean, he had those 2 runs at the beginning of the game on the end around, and then he got hurt. So
he had 2 runs for -1, but one of them went for 5. The other must have gone for -6 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, even Kerryon caught one, Marcus Davis caught one, Peyton Barber, Cameron Petway, Gray King caught 2, actually. We don't want to give him short shrift. So that's pretty interesting. All right, the last thing, unless I'm missing something, is we both need to talk about running backs. So
yes.
You talk about Peyton Barber, I'm going to talk about everybody else, including Peyton Barber.
Okay, I mean, I guess, a month ago or so, I said Peyton Barber wasn't that good. And, you know, he's not great. He's not going to be an NFL running back or anything.
No.
But Peyton Barber plays really, really hard. And he gets better as the game goes along. He doesn't fumble. He has good body lean. He moves forward. He doesn't lose yards much. And he's not very explosive. I mean, he's not explosive. Like, he makes Cameron Artis Payne look explosive.
yeah.
But
that's right.
He's solid. And guess what? You know, the 2 guys that we thought we were going to count on aren't doing crap.
Mm-hmm.
So he's out there getting it done every single game, and he's dependable. And so I appreciate him a lot more. I think he's turned into a pretty valuable player. I mean, I think he's dependable. I think he's a workhorse. I think he's really good in the second half. And, I think he's – with the body lean he has and the way he runs, I think he's really good at, like, getting first downs and that kind of stuff. So I'm happy for him.
John, I bought a milk carton yesterday, a carton of milk, and you know whose picture is on the side of it?
No, whose?
Javon Robinson.
Should be.
Yeah, I don't understand it all. And that kind of segues, you know, we're going to move things along here, but that kind of segues me over into what I just wanted to address, which is that this is what I said on Twitter, and you tell me what you think about it. I don't know if you saw it or not. You probably did, but there people were all just throwing in their 2 cents worth. And maybe I just did a poor job in 140 characters or whatever of explaining exactly what I meant. I said something to the effect of, if Auburn had a power running back that was going to go for 1,500 yards this season, we would be at least 6-1 and possibly 7-0. And of course, everybody goes bananas and says base. There were a lot of objections to that, but the two main objections were: A, how can you overlook the defense? How can you apologize for or make excuses for the defense? If you're, you know, and B, you know, the running game is not the problem. Peyton Barber is great. Okay. Here's my response. I'm not overlooking the defense. I'm not talking about the defense. The defense has nothing to do with this. Yes, if we had the 2004 or the 1988 Auburn defense out there, yeah, we'd probably be 7-0. No kidding. But that wasn't what I was talking about, okay? I'm talking about the run. I'm saying that even with the defense that we have now, even with this defense, as porous as it can be, right, as undependable as it can be, though it has had its moments, even with this defense, if we had a Trey Mason second half of the year type running game out there, if we had Jovan Robinson doing what we thought and hoped he was going to do, we would be... We wouldn't need the defense to be very good. And, you know, all those drop passes, we wouldn't have been throwing the ball. So we'd have so many touchdowns and be eating up so much of the clock and keeping our defense off the field that it wouldn't matter how bad our receivers or our defense were. So I'm not overlooking those other things. I'm just saying that if you change that one thing, and now again, people say, well, if, you know, candy and nuts and butts and all that. But what I'm saying is, this wasn't a hypothetical. We have Jovan Robinson on the team. We have a 3,000-yard in junior college back. It's not like I'm saying, gosh, well, I wish that Emmitt Smith. Well, I know. But it's not like I'm saying I wish that Emmitt Smith and Tony Dorsett were on our roster. Jovan, this is a new. You know what? This is my preliminary. This is not the official one. Oh, crap. But this is my preliminary
factoid of the week.
My preliminary factoid of the week, John, is that we have Jovan Robinson on the team. It's not a hypothetical. Okay, people, that's what I meant. If a player who actually is on our roster was playing the way he was expected by everybody to play, right? We would be doing better than we are now. I can't for the life of me figure out how people have some great objection to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you think that our running game is the best it could be with 3.2 yards per carry out there, you know, no offense to Peyton Barber. God bless him. He's done great. You may remember at the beginning of the season, I said I'm rooting for him. Remember that?
I do.
Yes. And yet, if you think that Peyton Barber is all that we need at running back, then that's fine.
Well, I mean,
I mean the people out there that are tweeting at me.
I get what you're saying. I do. I mean, I like Peyton Barber. I think he's doing a very nice job. But the reality is we need much more explosive plays on offense.
Exactly.
And the stat that was in our column this week and that I put out on Twitter the other day is but going into this game, we had 17 plays of 20 yards or more in 6 games. Okay. The 2014 Vanderbilt offense had 37 of those plays in 12 games. So we were behind the pace of last year's putrid Vanderbilt offense in big plays on offense. Okay.
This is my point. This is entirely what I'm saying.
And, you know, most of the ones we're getting are in the passing game. We're not getting those out of the rushing game. We're getting them out of the passing game.
And you know what? This brings me to my second preliminary
factoid of the week.
Okay. Here's my second preliminary factoid of the week. Perhaps some of you out there don't know this or don't realize it, but Auburn in the past has had many running backs who could go 80 yards in one play.
It's true.
Thank you. All right, and now...
Factoid of the week.
The reactor's melting down from being overused so much. Here's your factoid of the week. This is very short and simple. Shaun White still has not done what, John?
Done a touchdown pass.
Done a touchdown pass. How crazy is that? We did not throw a single touchdown pass in our 46-point game. So that gets to your explosive plays thing, right?
No, it's true. I mean,
And again, that's not a criticism of Shaun White, people.
No. It's just weird.
It's just a weird fact, but it informs and it reflects on the explosive play point that John is making. These two things work together, see? They're intertwined.
It's true.
And if you don't understand that at that point...
Blame yourself.
I have a new sound effect. I'm so excited. Now, I'm telling you, we did used to have running backs that could go 80 yards in one play. And to the contrary...
I don't have facts to back this up.
No, I do. Go look at our record books. I have a new sound effect. I have lots of new sound effects. So we do have play. And you know the player I think is going to be the one to eventually start cranking out big, long runs for touchdowns.
Kerryon Johnson.
Kerryon, my wayward son.
All right. We've had a nice tour through my sound effect board. Are we to the, let me see. Yes. I think it is time for one more. It's time for.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. Hopefully she's turned her light off by now and is reading or has gone to, or not reading with the light off, turned the light off and quit reading. What we got?
All right. First question comes from Auburn Elvis,
okay. Who
says, how cool was it that Auburn ran the Lutzy on the two-point conversion after they won touchdown?
Oh, that was great. I loved it.
It was really fun.
And he came all the way across, just like Lutzy Kirsten famously did.
Didn't do the dance, but...
No, that's okay. What an apple.
Our next question comes from Reynolds Wolf.
I've heard of him.
Who says...
friend of the show.
Will Auburn ever have a complete shutdown defense of the past, the Wayne Hall, Pat Dye defenses, or does that style of defense belong to the ages?
Well, there's this question, right? Is that kind of defense just impossible in today's football world and environment? What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, yes. The short answer is yes. You're never going back to the days when you had a defense that allowed, 6 points or 10 points a game and 200 yards. I mean, offenses and the rules for offensive football are just the pendulum has swung way too far that way.
I hear weeping. I think that's Tommy Tuberville.
Well, I mean, but here's the other part. You don't have to go back to the 1980s, okay? Less than 10 years ago, Auburn led the SEC in scoring defense and was in the top 10 in the country in total defense, yards allowed, and yards per play. Okay?
There are young Auburn fans right now that are hearing you say that and saying,
you can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
In 2007, that's what Auburn was. So less than 10 years ago, Auburn was number one in the SEC in scoring defense, and like we were number six in the country in total defense. So it can be done. But, I mean, that was offense is completely different now. But can we be better on defense than we are? Heck, yeah, we can. We're bad on defense. Mm-hmm. We're not good.
No. No, we're definitely not what you would refer to using the technical jargon term good.
Right. Well, I mean, I need to really spend a bunch more time this week watching all the plays of the whole season on defense again to try and diagnose everything. But
you need to do that. Yes, that is correct.
The simple answers are,
if you don't have that information for us next week,
blame yourself.
All right. But I mean, I have a lot of confidence in Will Muschamp and Tavarius Robinson. And I think that in the long run, if they stick around, the defense is going to be fine. I think with some of the young players in the defense are going to be good. I don't think we have a lot of difference makers in the defensive line other than Montrevious Adams. Dontavious Russell is okay. you know, Lambert is okay. You know, he was better last year, honestly. Mm-hmm. He's not very explosive this year. Just doesn't look as good. The other guys, you know, the other defensive ends were playing. I mean, McKenzie, we've been forced to play a linebacker basically at buck position. And, you know, he's okay. And he's solid, but he's not spectacular or anything. And you noticed that, I mean, you maybe haven't noticed, but we basically stopped playing Holland and our Ballyhoo defensive end freshman. Completely brain locking now. Our All-America defensive freshman.
Coward.
Byron Cap. His snaps have gone down dramatically, and Holland's have disappeared basically. Because they were part of a lot of problems. And then you see even in this game, guy, there was a play where Cowart had to contain and the guy got by him, and Cowart has no idea the ball's even behind him. He's still looking at going towards the backfield. So, that's another thing. Like, our recognition of screens in this game was terrible. I've seen high school teams recognize a screen quicker than we did in this game. Anytime you see the Auburn defenders and there's like more than one of them steamrolling towards the quarterback.
Exactly.
It's time to panic, because that means everybody's behind us with the blockers. We didn't get there by pushing the blockers out of the way. We got there because they kind of olayed us and they're setting us up. So
that's the sweet bitter feeling of the screen pass, right?
It is.
It's like from the defense's perspective. Defense's perspective, you're watching and you're like, oh, we're gonna kill that quarterback. Oh no. Mm-hmm. And that's even before they throw the ball. I mean, you just have that realization in your brain, the little voice. You're like, oh, look, we're rushing unabated at the quarterback. And before you can even formalize that thought as actual verbiage, immediately that other part of your brain goes, oh, no. And then he throws it, and you're like, ah.
And then you got offensive linemen, you know, especially with Arkansas, like 350-pound offensive linemen running free, hitting safeties and linebackers. So
yes.
That was really bad. And then – you know, again, Carlton Davis had missed one play at the end of the game, but he had a great game, I thought, and he's going to be fine. And Jones got hurt at the end of the game. I'm not sure if he came back in the overtimes, and I haven't heard anything about him. But, you know, Chris Frost is not good. I mean, he made the big interception, but a lot of times against the run, he's struggling. And Garrett is solid, but he's not spectacular or anything. So I think basically we need a big upgrade at linebacker, and then we need a big upgrade at buck, which is supposed to be kind of the X factor position. And McKenzie's okay; he's solid, but he's not going to make anybody forget about the other players that Florida had there. So that's my short term diagnosis about the defense. So.
What else we got?
Back to listener questions. Next Lister question from another one from Reynolds Wolf basically says, I'm convinced that after last year's bowl game, Matt Millen, and this year's Arkansas game, Andre Ware, that Millen and Ware are the worst color analysts born into the world. Which play-by-play crews do you like or dislike the most?
Oh, that's interesting. I know that it didn't work out well in the end, but I just used to love the two guys on the nighttime ESPN game. Mike Gottfried, right?
Yes.
Was the color analyst and what's his name? The Tuberville looking guy that was his name? I blanked out now. You remember who I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
The pair that they had, and I know they had some issues and ended up getting fired or whatever, but they were so good for so long through the 90s and into the early 2000s. Just
the thing in the game on Saturday is they kept calling the teams the wrong name.
Oh my gosh. Like, that was unbelievable.
Laughing. I was just laughing late in the game because they were so bad at it.
That was terrible.
Wow. I got to think about this, who I really like as announcers.
The one I really don't like, who I've never liked, is Brian Greasy.
Sure.
And his dad was even worse. I mean, you know, you can quarterback the Dolphins, but that doesn't make you a good TV personality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a good TV personality.
I'm meteorologist Reynolds Wolf of the Weather Channel and lifelong Auburn Tiger fan.
There you go. There's a TV personality.
All right, I got a couple more questions. From Scott Schroeder. Auburn needs to cut a power line or wherever it takes to make sure the Mississippi game doesn't start until around 1 o'clock.
That's the truth.
The pattern of 11 a.m. kickoffs is a problem.
Not good. No, he's right. We'll introduce a virus into the regulatory system of the electrical grid.
All right. Next question comes from War Damn Shirts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he says, will War Damn It become the Swamp Life equivalent at Auburn? I don't get it.
I don't either. Well, they got mentioned, so there you go.
All right. Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom, says, are you more or less confident about the remaining SEC games now?
Honestly, every week I get more. It's like first I'm like, oh, gosh, Ole Miss is going to kill us. Then I'm like, oh, man, we're going to kill Ole Miss. Now I'm like, oh, man, Ole Miss is going to kill us.
No,
I don't know if it's a rock, paper, scissors thing or not.
You know what, though? Here's my thing. We're playing better football now than we did at the beginning of the season. And I've seen all these other teams, and a lot of them are playing worse. Texas A&M is a train wreck. Yeah. Georgia is not good. Yeah. And Ole Miss has real flaws we'll talk about in a minute. So I feel – and look, I mean, that Arkansas team that we took to overtime beat Tennessee, and Tennessee was beating Alabama in the fourth quarter and missed three field goals and lost that game. So, I feel better about the rest of the schedule than I did a month ago. So,
yeah,
and again, other part is, again, I think Auburn has a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a quarterback that can play and make plays. And I think that, gives you a chance in any game because he can stand in there and make plays.
It's just as long as we actually, A, have receivers that are not injured, and B, they actually catch the ball.
I think they're going to work that out.
All right.
All right, next question comes from Ross Hatcher, who says, did anybody read the fine print about the gloves and the new Under Armour contract? He said, I think they're made in a buttered popcorn factory.
Yeah, I think that must be it. I don't know if he...
I don't have facts to back this up.
But I strongly suspect it.
All right, he asked one other good question. He says, you have one adjective, describe that game.
Gut-wrenching.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Painful. I mean, not
frustrating because we could have won it.
I think frustrating maybe for me just because it, but also that was it's stressful. Maybe is another one too, just because it went on. The tension was so high for so long in that game.
Well, it was disgust and then it became tense. Like I spent the first half just sitting on the couch, angry. And I spent the second half in overtime pacing back and forth. So two different kinds of tension, and neither is a very happy thing. Why do we subject ourselves to this? You want to talk about the Ole Miss game before we run out of time?
Let's do that.
All right. So we know that their big thing is they can pass the ball pretty well, got some good receivers.
Well, not just pretty well. They're the best passing team in the SEC by a good bit now.
Even over Mississippi State and Dak.
I mean, Dak is better in that he doesn't – we need to be clear. Dak Prescott is the best quarterback in the SEC by a mile. He has 18 touchdowns and one interception.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's – Ole Miss has more yards, so they're more productive with it from that sense. But a lot of that is because they can't run the ball.
Right.
Just like we've seen the past couple of years, they have a couple little scat back kind of guys, and they're not good at running the ball. They're very one-dimensional, but their one dimension is so good it causes problems. And they have four or five excellent receivers, and Treadwell's back 100% healthy, and you know he's coming for blood in this game.
Yeah.
He's going to be out to get us. So that's the real problem is, they're going to go four receivers a lot. And do we have guys that can cover the third or fourth receiver, successfully? And can we get any pressure on the quarterback? They got their big offensive tackle Tunsil back now, who's going to be, an NFL player next year, a high draft pick. And he did a good job against Myles Garrett. And if he does a good job against Myles Garrett, unless Lawson suits up and plays, I don't know if we're going to sniff a quarterback, which is going to be a problem.
Right.
So, we can't blitz because then we're going to have, guys man all over the place and man-to-man with nobody, no safeties. So, it's going to be a problem. So, the other part is, again, I think last year's game, we kind of turned it into a shootout a little bit. The other thing that we did is we kind of played keep away with the ball.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to need to do some of that.
I just don't – their defense is pretty good.
It is good, but they've had a lot of injuries. I mean, they're athletic, and but they've had a lot of guys hurt on defense. They're not the same as they could have been, and I think, they're not unstoppable on defense. They're not nearly as good as they're honestly in the middle of the pack right now in the SEC.
I mean, on the one hand, they lose to Memphis, and they turn around and limit Texas A&M to 3 points. And the only reason Texas A&M even scored was because they turned the ball over on their own, like, 30-yard line.
Yeah, but Texas A&M's a bit of a train wreck right now, I think. And we'll talk
I'm ready to play them. We got them coming up.
Yeah, you got that right. But I think, at home, though, I think, I worry about the 11 a.m. start a little bit, but
– is this another 11 a.m. game? I didn't even know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
This, again, could have been a night game on Halloween, which would have been, perfect. Like an 11 on the awesome scale.
Does the, our younger fans out there, our younger Auburn fans out there don't know that we used to play Florida on Halloween. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
We had some night games on Halloween against Florida that were just awesome.
The 87 Auburn Florida game in Jordan-Hare at night on ESPN.
Yep.
Emmitt Smith, Andre Bruce. That whole defensive front, they headlined it as the irresistible force versus the immovable object. Emmitt Smith versus the Auburn defense. And we beat their brains in.
We shut him down completely.
It was beautiful.
And, people wore costumes, and it was an absolute party in the stadium all night. So.
Yep. The Tiger Rag shirt was nightmare at Jordan-Hare.
So.
I still remember it like it was yesterday. Couldn't tell you what I had for lunch yesterday. let's see. Anything else about Ole Miss?
No, other than, I think worry about the early start, but I think, our offense is going to have some confidence in terms of, Sean White. And I think they're probably going to, loosen him up and do some stuff more in this game. Defensively, I worry about if Lawson plays, it'll be a huge, huge pickup, a huge difference in this game. But if he doesn't, I worry about us stopping them. We may have to win in a shootout. So
can I just make a plea to Gus Malzahn and Rhett Lashley? One thing, just one thing. When we make a first down, can we do something other than hand the ball straight up the middle?
Yes, we're very, very predictable.
I mean,
if you're going to hurry to the line and run a play that they know is coming, it really limits your chance of success.
You know how Gus likes to set something up? He'll do something and do something and then do something different. He's been setting something up since 2009. Okay? Gus.
Yeah.
They're ready for it. Okay? Yeah. You've totally suckered them in. They now think, and by they, I mean every team we play, they now think that you're only going to run the ball up the middle on first down. And you know why? Because you only run the ball up the middle on a made first down.
Yep. It's true.
They're ready. It's 6 years, well, five, give or take, of priming the pump.
When he pulls the counter out, look out.
It's going to go for 10 or 11 yards, man. It's going to be awesome.
10 or 11. It's going to go 100 yards.
It's going to be awesome. Yeah, it should count as four touchdowns on one play. It should count as four touchdowns. He set it up since 2009. All right. Should we go around the SEC? I really got to get a sound effect for that.
All right. Let's talk about around the SEC.
Around the SEC. Well, we know that Alabama held on, barely managed to beat Tennessee, which in Tuscaloosa, after the Alabama players were all running their mouths saying, we know how big a game this is. We're going to come out and show out. They actually said they were going to show out against Tennessee.
Against their big rival.
Yeah. Their number one rival, right? That's the team that keeps everything divided east and west, is that they don't want to lose their number one rival, who happens to be in the east, Tennessee. So, whatever.
Tennessee, who missed three field goals and should have won this game.
I've always said, I haven't always said, I've said it for the last 5 seconds. If you're using the words show out, that's not, nothing good comes of that. Nothing good comes of that, and you should frankly
blame yourself.
Thank you very much. Vanderbilt beat Missouri. I didn't even see that score till I saw your show notes. Vandy beat Missouri?
Missouri's offense is awful. And Vanderbilt is actually not bad. I'm kind of glad we're not playing them this year.
Does this have any chance of derailing the Missouri to Atlanta Express?
It's derailed. I'm sorry.
Has it derailed?
Yeah.
Who's going to go? Florida?
Florida.
Well, we got our lock coming up, so let's keep.
All right.
LSU beat Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky is not horrible. Ole Miss, we talked about. Mississippi State beat.
Well, Ole Miss beat A&M. You mentioned at the top of the show, A&M, you need to go read some of those stories online about the train wreck that's A&M football team right now. They're falling apart.
The rebellion and not trusting the coaches and stuff.
Yeah, they're on the 2012 Auburn track right now.
Wow.
That's a team that, I talk about a team that's going to, they better get together. They're going to lose the rest of their games.
Wow. This is another score. I just, after, the late game, I was doing some other stuff. I did watch the Ole Miss A&M game some, but I did not realize that Kentucky gave up 42 to the Dak attack.
It was pretty close for a while, but Ole Miss, Mississippi State just kept going at them and, took it to them. So, and Kentucky couldn't get it going in Starkville. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad that my friend Ray didn't go down there. One of my colleagues at the college, he thought about going. He's a big Kentucky guy. Really good guy. He was asking me if it was worth going to Starkville. I'm like, no. Let's see. I said I've been there two or three times and once would have done it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Looking ahead. South Carolina, Texas A&M. Now, that's two train wrecks. There's a train wreck on the cliff. And there's a train wreck at the bottom of the ravine, and the train wreck on the cliff falls over the cliff and lands on the train wreck in the ravine.
I think the difference is the South Carolina's going to play really hard for this interim coach guy, and Texas A&M's kind of – now, Texas A&M probably just has too much talent, so it won't matter. Miles Garrett will make a couple plays, and that'll be it, but it's not good. So,
Florida – versus Georgia, when such things come along, I turn to history, John, and that's where I have to say I can't find the daggum button. Where's the daggum button?
Who do you think is going to win?
Oh.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Well,
I don't have facts to back this up.
And if I'm wrong,
blame yourself.
But I'm just loving my new sound effects, but
a little carried away with those.
I got those two, and I'm really digging them. And you know what? We're not going to get a chance to use it again the rest of the season. So,
hey Beavis, what? Let's go fishing.
That's for you, Coach Burt. Florida versus Georgia. Only one thing ever happens when Florida plays Georgia, and that's that Florida beats Georgia.
I think you're probably right.
I mean, it always happens. It even happened last year. That's all you got to say. That's all it is.
That's it.
UT Martin at Arkansas. Who cares?
Tennessee at Kentucky.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Oh, there it is. UT-UK. Yeah, little tiny abbreviations. I didn't get it. Well, that's interesting. I mean, you got to think Tennessee wins, right? I mean, well, now see, I say that because Tennessee looked good against Alabama and Kentucky looked bad against Mississippi State, but –
but it's at home for Kentucky.
And Kentucky's been playing well.
And Tennessee now has the kind of body blow theory coming off the game against Alabama and the tough loss. So it'd be interesting to see. And then Vandy is at Houston. Houston, who is a top 25 Houston.
Wow. Not since the days of John Jenkins and Andre Ware and the air raid.
So they're under Tom Herman, right? The former Ohio State offensive coordinator, whose offense has been a train wreck since he left, and they're really good. So, but Vanderbilt's defense is actually good. This is actually going to be an interesting game. So.
Wow. So you think that Mason might stick around for another year at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, they're going to keep him. Listen, I know we talked a lot about how cruddy Auburn's defense is earlier. We wish we had Vanderbilt's defense. It seems really sad to say it.
Oh, man. We are pining for and longing for the great Vanderbilt performances in defense.
Vanderbilt currently sixth in the SEC in total defense.
Wow.
Okay? And I think they're number one in third down defense. I'm pretty sure they are.
Not since the days of Coach Woody.
Number one. We have allowed twice as many third down conversions as they have in about the same number of attempts.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I'm surprised it's not three times as many. Yeah, what, well, old coach, was it Woody McCorvey when they had a good defense?
Woody Woodenhofer.
Woody Woodenhofer. That's right. Woody Woodenhofer. Wow, that was, man, that was back in the Tuberville early era. That was some good stuff. All right, well, let's bring this sucker in for a landing. What have we learned this week, John?
We've learned you got carried away with your new soundboard stuff.
Is that what, that's what you're taking from this one? That's the takeaway from all this hour and 12 minutes is that I got carried away with the soundboard. All right.
You know, we learned that we both like and respect Peyton Barber, but we need more from.
Yeah.
So
it's not a slight on, you know, I guess I'm supposed to say bless his heart, right? That's fine. He's done fine. But we need more, you know, we need the home run threat. He's a good first base, you know, single, grind out a single. That's good. You got to have those on a winning team. But we need the home run threat, and we need it from somewhere because we're not getting the passing game. So, all right. And we've learned that I finally got the butthead sound effect just in time to never probably use it again for another year. So that's great. I'm glad I went to all that trouble because it is a pain. All right. Well, John, I think we're going to wrap this sucker up. Again, don't forget about the new book, Lorendo, by Kenneth Ringer. I think you'll really like it. And while you're out buying cool Auburn books, remember there are two other Auburn books from White Rocket Books, Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams. Decades just keeps ticking along a couple of copies a month. That's awesome. And that's what we want to see. So go check out our White Rocket Books on Amazon and whiterocketbooks.com. Let's get on out of here, John. What do you say? War Eagle, baby.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. Have you noticed the last two or three weeks at the very end of the show after the credits, I have me going, go to bed. I've been copying, cutting that out and pasting at the very end. All right, go to bed.
Take it easy, man.